Hey guys, I'm Adam Rapport, and this is the Bon Appetit Foodcast. And not only that, it's our 200th episode. Wow. That was quick, or maybe it wasn't quick. I don't know. I do know we've been around for a long time, mostly because of your support and devoted listenership. So thank you so much. And as always, if you have any thoughts about the podcast, any suggestions for new episodes, any feedback, you can hit us up at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. And as they say on other podcasts, please go ahead and rate us on iTunes. That helps us a lot. Okay, one other quick announcement. Thanks also to all of you who have signed up for our newsletter. We're going to change the format a smidge going forward. From now on, we will send out a newsletter only when there are recipes and articles talked about in a given episode so that you can get those links directly in your inbox, kind of like a slightly expanded show notes. So it might not be every week, but it will be most weeks, a little bit more succinct than it was prior. We will also keep you updated on any other podcast-related announcements, such as live podcasts, which we plan to do more of in 2019. So if you haven't signed up yet, please go to tinyletter.com/foodcast, enter your email, and then click the confirmation link that gets sent to your inbox. Now, to introduce this week's episode, the 200th episode of the Bon Appetit Foodcast, back by popular demand, we have got Carla Lolly Music and Emil Stonick talking about, yes, you guessed it, rice. One note, if you are a new listener and haven't heard episode 153, A Perfect Pot of Rice, or episode 161, Rice 2.0, now would be a good time to go back and listen to those before you listen to this latest installment. All right, without further ado, here is Carla and Emil.
It's going to take just at least 20 minutes just to apologize for it taking so long.
I know. Everyone, Emma Wortzman has told us that we only have 35 minutes to talk about rice, and you should have seen the look on Carla Music and my face.
Not only that, but I had no idea the last time we recorded rice that I was literally going to have to wait until the next year to talk about rice again.
I know.
I mean, one of the most, just some of the most positive feedback I've ever received was from the Rice Wizards. Shout out to all our Rice Wizards.
Keep swinging those staves and growing those beards.
And also, I just do want to apologize on behalf of Bon Appetit and Emma Wortzman in particular for making it take this long. We're so sorry.
You know, the people want what they want, and it's not always up to us if we give them what they want.
Yeah, it's not like you can order up Rice 3.0 podcast on Amazon Prime and expect it to show up the next day.
Right.
Nope. It just doesn't exist.
It takes time.
Literal time. Yep. And not that much time. Mm-mm. In fact, I feel that we may be wasting time.
You know what I was kind of imagining? I know this is also wasting time, but I was kind of imagining like a giant hourglass, yeah, but just has grains of rice in it. And it's been flipped upside down, and a rice wizard has just been watching,
wow,
each grain.
But maybe before the rice grains got put into the hourglass first, the rice wizard used like a special tool to pulverize it into smaller pieces so it would pass through.
Like broken rice.
Which is a thing. Which I was reading about just earlier because of a topic we'll get to.
Were you reading about it in Seductions of Rice?
I was, in fact. I have two books with me today. I have
seduced.
Seductions of Rice, which I'm seduced and I can't quit it at all. And it's filled with so much information.
Does Fernando know about this seduction?
No.
No. Mm-mm.
It stays at that's an office.
Sorry, Fernando.
It's an office book. And then the other one I brought was Lydia's, Lydia Bastianich. You know, she just goes by the first name, like a rock star. Mastering the Art of Italian Cuisine. I love the subtitle on this book.
Which is?
It's truly like overreaching. Everything you need to know to be a great Italian cook. That,
wow,
is a big promise.
It's a big promise. But, you know, I mean, Carla, you're writing a book. You know, what's this, you know, you got to have something.
I mean, this book has one of those special ribbons in it, you know, that's how you know it's serious.
Yeah, that's the real.
A ribbon instead of post-it notes to mark your page.
You would have walked away from that book if it was like quite a few of the things you'll need to know in order to be a great, well, maybe not great, but, you know, good at first. And then if you practice a lot, great Italian cook.
Right. Like, I think it's good enough recipes.
I liked it.
You can make
it. I didn't puke or get sick. A book of recipes. All right, Carla, let's get rice down to business. stop racing around. It's time to talk.
It's not a, never mind. I was going to say it's not a marathon. It's a sprint with rice.
Yeah, it's a rice. It is a rice of sorts. Be it a marathon or a sprint, it is a rice. The amazing rice.
So I think what we realized talking about rice in the past was that rice is a fantastic ingredient.
Mm-hmm.
One of our favorites.
Oh, yeah.
Like when it comes to a whole food, a whole grain,
mm-hmm.
just an ingredient that is minimally processed out of the ground,
mm-hmm.
rice is one of the greats.
One of the greats.
And I think we've already established that if we had to choose between rice and pasta, you know, forsaking our ancestry and everything else.
Whose ancestry?
My own, I guess.
Yeah.
Rice wins.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I learned something interesting, though, about my ancestors in some of the preparation for this conversation.
Did you do 23andMe just for this rice podcast?
Yes. No, I did 23andMe on rice.
Oh.
And it turns out that 5%, did you know that 5% of the world's production of rice happens in Italy?
For some reason, I thought you were going to say in space. In Italy, 5%.
Italy is responsible for 5% of the world's rice production.
Well, how long has that been the case?
Centuries and centuries. They've been growing rice in the Po Valley and all over the place.
Like, have you ever had rice from the Po Valley?
I probably have, because that's where the Cannaroli rice comes from.
Ah, and Cannaroli rice being the secret to
a great risotto. So we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yes.
So rice, one of the great foods.
Mm-hmm.
Just as we've said, a bowl of rice with butter.
One of the best. one of the best foods
you could have.
Yes.
But then we realized that rice is actually so much bigger than itself in a way.
Right. Rice isn't just the kind of thing that's on the side while you're eating other things. It's not just this kind of starchy vehicle. It's like there are all these times when rice is the star. Spotlight on rice. It's the center of the plate. Maybe it's the only thing on the plate, but it has so much more to offer.
Rice as the foundation of a great recipe for a dish.
The mortar, if you will.
That's right. Not just rice being like, I am great. I'm rice. I'm great.
Right.
Rice is going places. It's transformed.
Whether it's sprinting or trotting, it's going places.
So it is really true. So some of the dishes, and as soon as we sort of, you know, that's the thing about rice. It can actually eclipse itself. You know,
mm-hmm.
It becomes a superstar.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of those dishes right away, risotto, we already were sort of, you know, dancing around that with the whole Po Valley thing.
Mm-hmm.
But risotto is one of those like great dishes.
Yeah. Risotto is incredible. So talk to me about risotto.
What is risotto? So this is why the rice has been around in Italy. That kind of makes sense. And then you're like, right, well, they had all the rice, so they figured out something really great to do with it. Mm-hmm. You can count on Italians for that.
So not to backtrack to the Po Valley, but what part of Italy, where is rice eaten in Italy? Right?
So because it's like grown all over,
okay.
And it's eaten all over. So you'll eat rice, you'll eat, you know, if you're in Sicily, you'll have a seafood risotto. Mm-hmm. If you're in the southern part of Italy, also seafood in the Veneto, they do the mushrooms and ragu. So it kind of depends where you are, but the method for the risotto is sort of one of those classic things. And mm-hmm. then just depending on where you are, what region of Italy, it could go like very heavy, very meaty, or if you're in the leaner regions, it might be herbs or, you know.
So what I want to know, thinking about risotto, is so what to you is the perfect risotto texture? You know, because I feel like sometimes you'll get risotto at like a certain kind of restaurant and it's like literally it seems like they mounded it into like a ramekin and put it on your plate and it's just this like solid thing.
Yeah,
sometimes it's loosey-goosey. Like what's the...
It should never stand still, basically. So I read a couple of really good descriptions. One book, this great book, Authentico. Do you know this book? By Rolando Baramendi. It came out last year. It's a really solid, really beautiful pictures, a lot of great information. the word that he uses is alonda, O-N-D-A, which means wavy. So like if you pour it, if you plate it into your, you know, you plate the risotto and move the plate a little bit or the shallow bowl or whatever it is, that the risotto will actually sort of undulate.
Gotcha.
That's how I interpreted that phrase. Okay. And then Lydia had like a
sweet Lydia.
Very sweet, sweet Lydia. She refers to it as a creamy suspension.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Both. So wavy, creamy suspension, something that's got a little bit of, it's got fluidity.
Exactly.
But it's not watery.
There's motion in the ocean.
There's motion in the ocean. But also, I feel like presumably with that, with the texture you're describing, you could put a spoon into it and you would make some kind of a, almost like a, some kind of indentation, but not like you take a spoonful out and it's just like
I think
a
you
crater.
Take a spoonful out and it fills back in
slowly.
in a very like wavy way,
super
you know?
Wavy way.
So the races. So this was the other thing I learned. But the rice that is grown in Italy is the Japonica variety, which is the Japanese rice, which totally made sense to me because when I worked in restaurants and we made risotto, we used sushi rice.
Oh.
Because they're short grain, they're starchy, and then it seems like the variations are kind of like the exact shape of the mm-hmm. kernel of rice mm-hmm. or the grain of rice, I guess, how much starch they have, how some are little, they're all short grain, but some are like very short and round or mm-hmm. longer, and then the amount of starch that's held within. But I think you can make a great risotto from Canaroli or Arborio or...
So what makes or supposedly makes Carnaroli... did I say it right?
Canaroli. No, Carnaroli.
Carnaroli. You're faking me out.
Sorry.
Canaroli, Carnaroli.
And we're not rolling our R's.
Carnaroli rice.
What makes it the best?
Or Arborio.
Right.
Arborio I feel like you see a lot more often.
You do. I think the Carnaroli, when you get it, it's more expensive. Mm-hmm. That was referred to in that Autentico book as the king of races for risotto.
Well,
yeah, exactly.
For
you know
risotto.
What that means.
Okay.
For
okay.
risotto, yeah. And that it just was sort of the longest of the short grains, the thickest, and then has very special concentrated starch so
gotcha.
That it can be very creamy without having to be overcooked, so you still have the al dente grains.
So it's going to give up its starch without falling apart
exactly.
fully the way it would for like congee, which we'll talk about later.
Exactly. So the method in making risotto, whether you're going to finish it with, you know, sautéed mushrooms or two handfuls of chopped herbs or just some saffron threads or lemon and parm, is kind of all starts the same, right? So you start with olive oil and you sauté aromatics, usually finely diced onion, until that's like completely translucent, not brown, and that's the flavor base. It's like your sofrito for the risotto. And then the key step is that you add the rice, the risotto rice, mm-hmm. and cook it until it kind of goes clear.
So it becomes kind of translucent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that, the way that I was taught when I worked at a restaurant was that when you stir it, it should kind of sound like glass
uh-huh.
in the bottom
almost like
of the pan.
A rattling.
Like marbles, if you were stirring marbles around mm-hmm. and they were kind of making, but like a...
So you've kind of dried the situation out a little bit and then you've kind of coated each individual grain of rice with some of that fat.
Exactly.
And so they're kind of like, instead of being like a sticky sort of situation, they're kind of clanking around.
Yeah. And they make a little clattering kind of glass sound.
So sorry to jump back for a second, but do you rice rinse for risotto?
No rice rinsing.
No rice rinsing.
No, it's just going, it's unlike, you know, biryani or, even in some of the rice pudding recipes I looked at, or a lot of times when you're going to rinse the rice.
Right. Because the rice has a little bit of residual starch on the outside just from processing,
yeah.
packaging, transportation.
But you
which
want
if
that.
You want, if you want fluffy rice, you want to get rid of that by rinsing and pouring out and rinsing and pouring out and doing that again until you can't stand it anymore. In this iteration, you want that starch. It's
yeah,
an
you're
asset.
Like, what we're after here is the starch, so let's just keep it
just
keep it in
the
party. That's right. And then, so you're encapsulating it with the hot oil, exactly like you said, and it's sort of making this little coating on the outside that prevents it from getting too starchy or falling apart too soon. So it's like coating it in the oil also like is warming. You're also warming up the rice, the grain of rice itself, so that the center is like a little bit closer to what's happening on the outside. And then from that point, you start in with the hot stock.
Hot stock.
Simmering stock. Ladlefuls.
So you've got like a little, you've got your risotto pot where you've got your clanking broken glass rice that's now fully translucent. And then you have simmering, a pot of simmering stock right next to it.
Yes.
And a ladle at the ready.
And a spoon. Mm-hmm. Gotta have a spoon. So you have to stir. So this, the adding of the stock, all risotto recipes are going to tell you the same thing. You're adding the stock gradually. You're stirring the whole time. And as you do that, the rice is releasing starches. So there's something about like the gradual cooking time. You're giving the rice enough time to actually cook, but at the same time, you're agitating it constantly. So it keeps releasing starch into the stock.
So you're adding the stock and it's being absorbed. And then like the pan starts to look a little bit dry and then you hit it with a little more stock.
It sounds like you've made risotto.
me?
But yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing people don't, I mean, I'm sure people do talk about this, but it's such a simple thing and it's sort of this like magical process that's happening. But you may not use crappy stock.
Oh, God.
You're better off using water.
Truly.
And some of the recipes I looked at actually were just with water.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because if you think about it, like we would eat rice cooked in water, no problem.
Sure.
Happily.
I bet risotto made with water, whatever, like just seasoned water would be really delicious.
Isn't that interesting? I'd have never done it that way. But if you had a choice between like box stock and water.
Well, also if you're trying to make it, because I feel like, you know, there's a way of thinking about risotto where it's like, it is the dish. You know what I mean?
Right.
It is, and I know we're talking about rice in the spotlight, rice in the center of your plate, but there's also so much of risotto that is kind of is a starchy base a la polenta almost for something like a ossobuco or something meaty and flavorful on its own, in which case you kind of maybe just want to taste the rice and you don't need to keep, you know, it doesn't need to taste like stock and saffron and tons of other aromatics. It's just kind of doing its own thing.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that way. Like you could eat risotto by itself and it would be 100% a dish, but then it's this like great pairing for other.
I mean, it's also kind of how we think about the whole like secondi portion of like an Italian menu. You know, it's like Americans are like, pasta is dinner.
Right.
Not like, you know, you eat a little bit of pasta or a little bit of risotto or a little bit of polenta and then, you know,
and then have your meats.
Right.
And so the stirring, the gradual adding, and then the tasting so that you're going for, you can always adjust the texture of how wavy or undulating your finished thing is by adding a little bit more stock, but you can't get around the fact that you have to cook the risotto until it's al dente.
Yep.
Right. So
you always end up having a little bit more stock.
You should. Yeah. You want at least like 6 or 8 cups, and it's and people think that making risotto is so hard, and it's really. It's only because it's active time of like standing and stirring.
I think people really equate difficulty and how long they have to engage with their stove.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not hard. It's not harder than chopping a dozen ingredients for a salad.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I would say chopping a dozen ingredients way more annoying than like the only thing you have to cut up is like half an onion.
Yep.
And then that stirring and stock additioning. That's like some really solid zone out meditative time.
Oh, yeah. That's podcast time.
That is big time podcast time.
I really hope that somebody is listening to this. they're like, you know, I'm going to make risotto, but I don't want to stay. I'm going to stand there. You know, I'll put on a podcast. I'll put on the Bon Appetit Foodcast. Oh, Rice 3.0. Oh, listen to that. And we're talking to you right now.
While you make risotto. Stirring.
Don't stop. Don't be tempted to add just too much liquid because you're feeling lazy.
Okay, so this brought up a whole other thing. What, and I really want to know, what are your feelings about oven risotto?
Excuse me?
Risottos that bill themselves as like a no-stir baked risotto.
You know how this is like a kind of a non-answer to that, is like, I'm sure that somebody has developed a really good recipe for risotto in the oven. And I'm sure it comes out and it's nice and wavy. I'm sure like you can really nail the time and like the amount of liquid so you have kind of like perfect, you know, that perfect kind of, you know, a grain of rice that has like a little bit of bite but it's still suspended in this kind of wavy whatever. I want to know why.
Right.
I'm like, how often are you eating risotto? That, you know, it's like if you're like, oh my God, all I eat is risotto. All my family eats is risotto. They love risotto. I have to make it every day. How can I not be stuck by the stove all day long making the risotto? You know, then maybe that shortcut is like a good one. But to me, for certain things like risotto that have kind of this like mythology around how it's meant to be done, which I think is, you know, not exclusive to Italian cooking, but I feel like we think of it kind of iconically as, you know, I want to do the thing.
Right.
I want to be a part of that.
Right.
I want to be a part of that story.
That's
I don't need somebody to like science me out of, you know what I mean?
That having that experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like roasting a chicken with a blow dryer. Sure. You can.
you can if you, maybe you are in theater.
Right.
And you're in the dressing room getting your makeup done
for
hours. You have no time to cook, so
sure.
You cook it with a hairdryer.
Right. Or you live in a trailer.
Did you actually?
That's like a real thing.
It's a real thing, the hairdryer?
Someone did attempt it.
Is it like beer can chicken where you just stick the dryer guy into the cavity and flip it upright?
Definitely not.
And then you clip
a
curling iron and a straightening iron onto both the wings and then it just sits there.
Yep. Yeah. That's how you do it. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. I feel the same way.
Yeah.
It's like it's a shortcut. I can't imagine that it gives you as good as a result. So if you want to really make the thing, also, what's 20 minutes? 25 minutes of stirring? That's like a show.
They only gave us 35 minutes for this.
No, this whole thing.
I know.
So that's risotto and creamy suspension. Fantastic.
Delicious.
Finish it with whatever you want, even leftovers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then a byproduct, we have to mention arancini.
Ooh, yeah, let's talk about
arancini. The wonderful stuffed and fried rice balls.
Stuffed and fried.
And we have touched on rice balls and rice triangles.
Did we?
Yeah, we did.
Mm. Oh, well, I guess we did.
It was 2018. Maybe you don't remember.
Oh my God, that year. What a blur.
But I had a lot of arancini when I was in Sicily this summer, which they're eating a lot of risotto. So when you've got leftover risotto, you make arancini, which are rice balls. Take your cold risotto, put it into a shape of a ball.
Mm-hmm.
Which if
it's gone at this point from wavy and kind of loose to chilled and pretty firm.
It's going to thicken up even as it sits. It's like polenta in that way. Even, you know, as it cools off, it gets thicker. And then you put it in the fridge.
And I feel like that's worth mentioning, thinking about the waviness. Because like polenta, you know, you're stirring. You're like so in this. And it's... Everything's going to be looser.
Yes.
Like that is going to be looser when it's hotter, when it's still on the stove.
Totally.
But from the time that it like comes off the stove, even if that's like 5 minutes and then gets spooned onto plates, it's going to be thicker.
Yep.
So kind of I like to err on the side of too loose.
Even looser. Yeah. And also maybe a tiniest bit undercooked. So it's kind of like when you finish cooking your pasta and the pasta cooking liquid.
See?
Like there's going to be carryover cooking in those few minutes. I always finish my risotto with like a nice fat dollop of butter.
Meow.
You could stir in some olive oil, but also it's weird, like parm. If you add parm at the end, it'll loosen it as the cheese melts, but then that will also make it tighten up. So then, if you have cold risotto, if by the very unlikely scenario that you have rice risotto left over, then you dredge it, little egg, little breadcrumb.
So you formed a little ball. Do you ever stuff?
Because you can,
So you'll take like a cube of mozzarella or like a piece of sausage or something and stick it in the middle of your little ball and then cover it up.
Exactly. And so we have a great recipe, BA's best arancini.
Oh, yeah. I saw some arancini.
That were stuffed with a little cube of mozzarella. Sometimes in Sicily, that would just be like bechamel would be in the middle. I know. It was crazy. So I guess when bechamel is cold, too, you can kind of like spoon it and put it in there. Mm. And then you smush the rice around it, make it a ball again.
Rice gusher.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Talk about the creamy suspension.
Hello.
So, yeah.
Cool.
Larger than life.
Arancini. So here's a question that I have, because I know that we also have a rice. Wow. I don't know what it is. As soon as I get into this podcast studio with you to do these rice podcasts, the word rice is just...
It's just
replaces
in there.
Random
it
words.
It feels rice.
Right. Yeah. Hi, my rice is a meal.
Right. And this is like the uprising.
Right.
Yes.
Hi, yeah. How are
Join
you,
me in the
how
uprising.
How are you ricing today? The rice system.
We did almost have to have a protest. Remember that day when I was like, I'm going to stage an uprising? Because we couldn't get a slot.
That's every day about one thing or another.
Are Carla's you talking like, about me?
No, no, just generally at the magazine. Somebody's like, you know what?
Uprising.
This cannot
3 o'clock.
Stand. Yeah, it's normally like 3 o'clock when you're like, I have so much work to do. I'd rather foment revolution than turn in my copy.
That is correct.
Yeah.
That is rice.
Mm-hmm. That's rice.
You're rice again.
So we were talking yesterday about Reese BC.
Correct.
So talk to me about that and how that is different.
Well, Reese BC was one of those, again, classic Italian dishes that has this like lore around it as like a springtime celebration, rice and peas. I mean, mm-hmm. it's like every lots of cuisines do this. And this something about the combination of rice and peas.
What is it with rice and peas?
What is it? But I think what it is saying Reese BC is like very enjoyable. So mm-hmm. it's like, oh, Reese BC. It's like one of those things. And then... We did one, or we were going to do one, and I started looking into it, and I was like, oh, it's risotto that you finish with green peas.
Mm,
period.
Okay.
End of story.
See, I always thought of it as being a little looser than a regular risotto.
Maybe it's just a super undulating risotto.
Super,
maybe more soupy.
So wavy.
I think I thought it was soup, more like soup, too.
Mm-hmm,
but it's
mm-hmm.
really just risotto with peas.
Okay. Well.
Would eat.
Yeah. So speaking of kind of soup, so we're going from, you know, we've spent a lot of time talking about fluffy rice.
Yes.
So now we're getting to risotto, wavy rice, Reese BC, not a soup, but maybe sometimes a little bit looser.
It's saucy.
Saucier. So then let's keep going farther from...
More liquid.
Farther from whole grain to
yes.
more liquid. Let's talk about examples of... soupier situation. Well, what one of my favorite...
So same amount of rice, more amount of liquid.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Right. I was going to say one thing that I really like before we talk about, you know, congee or juk or some of the kind of more like purely rice-based soup porridgey sorts of things is that I love adding just a handful of rice to a soup or a
yes.
stew or something like that because... we've been talking about all the starch that
right.
rice can kind of give and like all that. Sometimes if I have a soup that's like looking a little thin, maybe
yeah.
I wasn't paying a ton of attention to it. And it's just kind of like, I got some broth and I got some vegetables and it just like, it's feeling a little watery.
Yeah.
I love just throwing in a handful of rice. And that could be, you know, that could be basmati rice. That could be sushi rice. That could be carnaroli rice. That could be, you know, brown rice. The cooking time is going to vary, but just cooking it for another 20 minutes, half an hour, just
yeah.
until it's released some of that starch, because that will actually make all of that liquid a little bit richer and
totally.
Starchier.
Give it body.
Give it body.
I like doing that a lot in a tomato soup.
Ooh.
And then if you could blend it or not blend it, but like tomato soup with rice, I don't know what that is about, but like that seems so comforting and delicious. And then chicken soup with rice.
Totally.
Instead of noodles,
mm-hmm.
which I probably had more of that kind of...
Chicken soup with rice.
I think so.
Well, I will say I prefer a chicken soup with rice to a chicken noodle soup if for no other reason than the fact that the leftovers, I think, are better.
Totally.
Because as soon as you have pasta, and you've written about this before, I think, if you're making like a pasta fagioli or like a minestrone or something like that, if you got the pasta in there,
yeah.
you put that in the fridge,
yeah.
and the next day it's like
it just
what
absorbs,
was a soup
right.
is now a solid mass.
And it's like, how did those pastas triple in size?
Yeah, totally.
You know, and get all like weird and kind of blubbery.
Starts off as an elbow, little elbow. All of a sudden, it's a whole arm cast.
But yeah, over a slightly overcooked rice is not going to bother me nearly as much.
No, totally.
Also. Rehab on the word porridge, which has a negative, but it's a wonderful thing.
I know, but people still have been. There was the whole porridge thing, which I
right,
feel like
there
is
was
kind of,
a whole porridge thing,
which
and we're talking about
was,
like a trend of porridge,
right? Which and I feel like that porridge moment was also driven a lot by the kind of like new Scandinavian
yeah.
situation, which like didn't actually make anything seem brighter or sunnier just made everything feel like, well, it's not so bad in this warm hut.
Well, it's got pumpernickel in it now.
With my dung fire and my... my pumpernickel porridge. I found a seagull egg. I'll crack it upon it.
Shout out to Scandinavia.
Shout out to Scandinavia.
Seagull egg.
Sup, Renee?
But, you know, that's terrible.
No. Porridge.
That whole thing. It was really bad.
It was really bad. So porridge.
And it wasn't that fun.
Let's forget about porridge.
No,
though,
but,
even
but
though,
porridge and gruel. Like, I feel like somebody. Oh, yeah,
yeah, bring the G word into
the mix.
Well,
that's what I'm saying. I think people think like, oh, porridge and gruel are synonymous. They're not. Gruel is.
Polenta is a porridge.
Correct. Is it?
I mean, what's not porridgey about it?
I don't know. How do you define porridge? I brought a lot of books with me. I did not bring the porridge book.
Gruel and more.
I thought porridge, well, I guess polenta's a grain. I was going to say, I feel like porridge has to have a grain, but you can make porridge out of oats. So why can't you make
cream
porridge
of wheat?
Out of...
Cream of wheat's a porridge, is it not?
Totally.
So
that's
then
a grain.
Polenta is porridge.
It's right behind it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Hmm, interesting.
Well, although I feel like there
so
is a distinction.
So then what is gruel? Then what's gruel?
Gruel is not within our purview. There's no new gruel. There's no, like, rehabbing gruel.
I know.
There's
wouldn't it be funny with this whole, like, you know, short ribs were like the lowly butcher cut, and then they became, like, highfalutin, and then, the whole porridge craze of 2016,
right.
And oxtails, and, like, taking the humble thing, and, like, I want to see the chef who, like, brings back gruel.
Asabuco with gruel.
It's nose to tail gruel.
Yeah. It's actually our dishwater that we've emulsified it slightly with a little bit of last season's broken rice.
And a little bit of compost. Just for that umami funk.
Lightly fermented kitchen scraps.
Sauerkraut gruel.
Grease trap seasoning. Grease trap bouillon.
So, yeah.
Anyways,
back.
Gruel.
Anyway, gruel.
Forget gruel about gruel.
It's always going to have a negative.
Yeah.
I don't porridge. Feel like you can put a spin on it. Porridge, on the other hand.
At least makes me think of grandma.
Totally. And like know? A country house. Mm-hmm. Like a little hut. Hmm. With little mushroom caps and gnomes. I think in the cottage, in the country home with the porridge, there are curtains in the windows.
Oh, cute.
Maybe with the heart cutouts.
Somebody sewed them one summer.
So we were going to talk about congee,
Right.
But
we're going...
segue to congee is through the path of porridge.
The path of porridge. one of the many challenges faced by the rice wizard. The passage of porridge.
The path.
The path. Oh, sorry.
If you want to get to Congee Village, you have to go through the path of porridge.
Love Congee Village.
Great place.
Great restaurant in Lower Manhattan.
Wonderful.
Wonderful. They specialize in congee, which is rice porridge. Which, like, if you're thinking about... So, just, you know, loosely speaking, there are a lot of cultures in which rice porridges are consumed with much glee, including my own personal culture.
It's funny that you said loosely.
Loosely.
Because
yes,
it
because,
is. It's
because
loose.
It's kind of what would happen if you took... I mean, the procedure is so different from, like, a risotto. You're not toasting the grain or, you know, kind of doing that kind of toasty
guy. Yeah,
toasting,
but
the,
yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And instead, you're normally cooking rice in a flavorful stock of some sort, often like a chicken stock or a fish stock.
Or it could also just be water.
Or just be water. And then is being cooked until those grains go from being kind of frayed around the edges to being kind of fully tender to being completely blown up.
Right.
And then which will happen if you quote-unquote overcook a risotto.
Right.
Right? But instead, that's what we want here. So we want those grains to explode and almost just turn into this kind of thickened soup. It's almost creamy.
That's how I like to eat congee, too, where the grains are completely broken apart and where the starches have released so that the liquid itself is thick. But you can kind of stop it anywhere
totally.
On the spectrum. It's just that... you're not trying to find the ratio between, like, the perfect amount of liquid to the perfect amount of rice like in a pilaf where all of that is steamed off and you just have this like perfect individuated grains, or even risotto where they come together and they make this like magic sauce. It's like way more liquid.
Right. But I still think you have to have a good ratio to start, because otherwise, I've made the mistake before of trying to, it actually takes quite, like you're saying, a lot of liquid to get that rice to where it's going to like absorb, you know, the grains are going to absorb the starch, explode, become that kind of like loose, spoonable soup, you know, almost like a tomato soup texture, slightly thicker. I've often started with too much rice. And I've done the same thing. I do the same thing with polenta.
Do you have a ratio, or you just kind of eyeball it?
I normally have kind of eyeballed it. I'd like to, that's a goal for the winter, take a little deeper dive into congee and rice porridges.
And do you have favorite toppers? Do you just like it as it is?
Oh, I mean, if I'm sick.
Yeah.
Just cooking, like, you know, I'll go splurge on the like expensive, you know, like you can get like Brodo or something like that, the really fancy
broth,
and then heat that up, and then, you know, throw in a handful of rice and cook that until it's kind of thickened. And then it's like, you know, just drinking broth is kind of, sorry, Marco Canora, a little depressing feeling to me, or a little, you know,
austere.
Yeah, a little gruely. You're like, broth is just,
it's a little like, Scandinavian, yeah. Let's be real.
And then, because it just gives it a little bit of body, and that's like, eating that on its own with like a drizzle of sesame oil, or, you know, just a sprinkling of seeds, or a little bit of cilantro or something like that, is some scallion. This is really delicious.
Really nice.
Or sometimes like a little drizzle of soy sauce too. Yeah. If you have left the congee like kind of austere. Which I like sometimes. But also it's a really great platform for leftovers. If you have some, you know, roasted vegetables, or some, you know, shredded rotisserie chicken, or a little bit of leftover fish, it's a good way to turn that into kind of a delicious, satisfying, soothing, spoonable meal.
It's a great savory breakfast.
Ooh, yeah.
Get a jammy egg in the mix. Ooh. You know, a little frizzled leek, a little chili crisp.
Aye, aye, aye.
It would be great with some chili crisp. Mm-hmm. It is like one of the great comfort foods. Mm-hmm. Rice in general, but congee especially, is like so restorative.
Well, I do think there's something about, I know we keep just coming back to porridge, but I feel like there's something about it that also like feels really elementally human. You know, it's like we eat all kinds of porridgeified foods, you know, from the time we're like little kids, like oatmeal, you know, all of those things are really, you're not doing a ton of chewing, but it still has some texture. You know, that's, you know, you eat it when you're an old person. You don't have any more teeth.
I was gonna say, the beginning of the life, the end of the life.
Full circle.
And all the steps in between.
Mm-hmm. Rice is there for you.
We did get a wave from Emma, which I think was her waving to say that we would be back to record really soon.
Oh, I thought the wave, I always thought the wave was, whatever you do, don't stop talking about rice.
If you
have any other tangents that you want to go on,
that's right.
Now is a good time to do it, because we have an hour and 35 minutes.
That's right. And we did get the wave, which was to introduce last topic.
Oh.
Perhaps. Well, we skipped over a lot of stuff. This is what keeps happening with the rice.
You know,
this is the whole point of rice.
We aim.
This is why I have 6 different rice books, and that's not even scratching the surface.
Of your rice book collection?
Of rice books in the world.
Oh.
I mean, you could never run out of information to share about rice. Mm-mm. We've done nothing.
This is nothing.
Nothing. What? I have one question.
What is it?
And then we can keep talking about it after I ask it. Rice pudding, yes or no?
I love rice pudding.
It's really interesting.
It is one of my favorite desserts.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That is really interesting. Yeah. It is one of the great maligned foods.
I think so. Wait, well, what's your take on rice pudding?
I can get into it, but I don't want other stuff in there.
Oh, interesting.
Like in general, I think rice pudding is very divisive. I think one of the things that makes it doubly divisive is the idea that there's a good chance you're going to get a raisin.
I don't like raisin.
And you're okay with that?
Yeah, I like a raisin.
I don't want a raisin in my rice pudding, but I do see the value in rice pudding.
So you don't want anything in your rice pudding?
I don't mind flavors.
Uh-huh.
And like sweetener.
Uh-huh.
And then there's different ways where like you can par cook it and then cook it in milk after that. There's some where you like reduce the milk and then use the milk reduction to cook it. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to get to rice pudding. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't want a lot of stuff. I don't want anything in there. How do you do it?
I mean, I've done it a lot of different ways. I had a friend who would make a rice pudding that it was a very elaborate. It was like a family recipe. And for some reason, I'd had it dozens of times, but never really saw how it was made exactly. But I know that there was I know that there was a lot of constant stirring going on, kind of like a la a risotto sort of situation. And then there was also, I think, egg and incorporated into it to thicken at the end.
Yes.
Which was very appealing to me. But I remember for a long time when I used to cook at a summer camp, I would make this, it's a variation, it was like a Mark Bittman How to Cook Everything super easy rice pudding, where it was just, you would take like a half hotel pan and you would put milk in it, you'd put a certain amount of rice in it, you'd put some spices, sometimes I put a little star anise and a little cinnamon stick and sugar and butter, and then you would just put it in the oven. And
oh,
it would just happen.
Any par cooking of the rice at all? Just
no.
Raw rice.
Raw rice.
And bake it.
And bake it.
Wow. So it's like the baked risotto of...
Yeah. So, you know, would I do that if I was just making, you know, rice pudding for a dinner party? Probably not. I'd probably go with a stirry because I like to stand by the stove.
Sure.
But for, you know, 120 people, way easier.
Amazing.
Pop them in. You know, you set them up, pop them in.
I think you have to stir a lot when you're making it because of the scorching, especially if there's dairy, dairy in the thing and any sugar, then you're going to get a scorch situation. I do like it, though. And I also like tapioca pudding, and really remind me of each other.
So
but
good.
I don't want, like, we have one on the website, all due respect, Rick Martinez developed this recipe, and it's just a different direction, but it's got dried fruit in it, and it's got an egg. I don't think you need it.
I like, you know, I think because it's so, because it's not like a congee or something that's going to get a little topper, you know.
Right.
Where you're going to have a little bit of textural intrigue, you know, maybe you get a little piece of peanut or something.
But can you add that at the end?
You could.
Like a crushed pistachio.
I think that's great. I think a crushed pistachio on top is nice. I think making some kind of little like fruit compote sort of thing, even if you're just like, you know, warming up blueberries and a little sugar.
Sure.
And kind of drizzling that on top, especially if it's a kind of scoopable rice pudding. You know, they'll put a scoop in a bowl and then drizzling it with something delicious. I think that's really great.
I just don't want like an Armagnac prune. You know?
Oh my God, I want an Armagnac prune so badly. You have no idea how good that sounds to me. On top of rice pudding or in it? Forget it!
So we are the same in that we see the value in the dish of rice pudding. We feel that it deserves to be on the podium. It is one of rice's great contributions.
Oh, yeah.
But perhaps our finishers is where we take a different path of pudding. Mm-hmm.
A different path of pudding, the passage of pudding. So if you liked Rice 3.0, all of your letters of support, your emails, your tweets,
meant a lot.
Your Tinder swipes, all of that is going to get us to 4.0.
Yep.
And you should really reach out to Emma Wortzman directly.
It's true.
You can find her on Instagram, DM her, comment.
Yep. Emil and I are buoyed by the support, and Emma is really the decision maker here.
Yeah.
So just kind of work those comments out accordingly.
Yeah. And if we can't figure out a way to kind of ram a Rice 4.0 through the pipeline in the next couple of months, look for a Patreon. We're going to start our own podcast.
That's correct.
You heard it here first, folks.
How hard could it be? There's so many podcasts.
The Rice-cateers. Yeah, there's so many podcasts. How come there isn't our podcast about rice?
I mean, there kind of is. It just, you know.
It's trapped inside another podcast.
As we said at the top of the hour here, it takes time.
It's like an alien where the little alien's inside the person and then it just bursts. It doesn't have to burst out so violently.
No.
But it could.
It might. You just
It'd
don't
be
know.
Gooey and screaming and clawing. Yeah. We don't want that.
Rice 4.0, the uprising. This was great. I hope the rest of your day is just on the ups.
Carla, I think it's kind of all downhill from here, probably, to be honest. But, you know.
Congee for dinner.
May the rice be with you.
The Bon Appetit Foodcast is produced by Carrie Polis and Christina Che, and produced and edited by Emma Wortzman. Our theme music is by Nathaniel Wortzman. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us about this or any other episode, email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.